It's A Couple Cooks, the podcast with Sonia and Alex Overheiser. We're a couple on a mission to find the tastiest, good-for-you eats you can make in your kitchen. Because the way we eat can make a meaningful difference.
Join us as we chase after real good food through stories, recipes, and conversations about cooking at home and eating well. Welcome to the A Couple Cooks podcast. I'm Alex.
And I'm Sonia.
And we're glad you're here.
On today's show, we have something special for you. It's a husband and wife who work together, similar to Alex and I. And this husband and wife duo are farmers. They are the couple behind Tumbleweed Farm in Oregon, Andrea and Taylor Bemis. And they also have a food blog called Dishing Up the Dirt. You will hear all that it takes to run a farm and have that idyllic farm life.
Idyllic, I'm sure. But before we get to that interview, let's talk a bit about this party that we're throwing.
Right. We just announced that we are throwing a dinner party and we want you to join in. So you may have heard, if you've heard previous episodes of our show, we have a cookbook coming out in February called Pretty Simple Cooking.
Order it today. Everywhere books are sold.
It is 100 vegetarian recipes and then our 10 life lessons that helped us go from cooking fast food and frozen food to cooking together on the regular. We are so excited to share this book with you. And we thought we wanted to have a little party with all of you. And since today we have all sorts of great technology to connect us, we decided why not all of us have a dinner party together on the same night. So we're calling it the Pretty Simple Cooking Dinner Party. It is on Saturday, February 17th. So we've got a few months, but we are in the planning stages now and we would love to have hosts sign up.
And what exactly does it mean to be a host? So you're flying to Indianapolis?
No. Actually, we're going to have hosts host a dinner party in their own home.
Oh, and we're like Santa Claus. We're visiting 100 homes in the same night.
No, actually, we will just show up using the magic of technology.
Oh, I love technology.
So if you want to be a host, your only ask would be to eat dinner that night with someone else. Be it your spouse, your partner, your kids, or you can use it as an excuse to throw a big dinner party, dress up, get out candles, drink wine, and have a big party. So it can be literally yourself, your husband, your roommate in your pajamas eating dinner, or it can be a big blowout party.
I like the glamour idea. Get dressed up. It's February. Not a lot of excitement going on.
Exactly. That's what we've heard from some of our hosts signing up. They're really excited about something to look forward to in February. So we're hoping that each party can make a recipe from our book, and we will be sending out some ideas of some good recipes to make in the winter.
So if I go to prettysimplecooking.com, I see this map. What am I looking at?
We are looking for hosts in every single state in the U.S., at least one. So one or more. We're hoping to have many more, but at least one. So right now we have, I think it's about 31 states are filled up.
It's pretty solid.
Yeah, we have about 125 dinner parties, and our stretch goal is 500 dinner parties.
And if I can figure out the technological issues, we're going to be throwing up the world map soon because we're getting a whole global festivity here.
Right. I just heard actually from two separate people in Salzburg, Austria.
Great.
Didn't know each other, but want to have dinner parties. We have one in Paris. We potentially have one in Bangkok.
I think Canada.
Right. Maybe we do. Uganda. We have, I think, 7 or 8 in Canada. And yeah, so we are looking for people all over the world to join in to this party. And what better thing to do in the middle of winter than to celebrate good food and good people? Except that it might not be winter if you're in another place in the world.
Good point. It'll probably be a lovely tropical dinner over in Bangkok. So for all those details, head to prettysimplecooking.com or just email Sonia. It's sonia@acouplecooks.com.
Right. If you want to be a host, just shoot me an email. Say, I want to be a party host, or I want more information about being a party host. Remember to spell my name with a J, so it's Sonja@acouplecooks.com.
And the more exclamation points you use, the more points you will get.
Wait, there are points involved in this?
I think so.
Okay.
There might be prizes, right?
There will. We're hoping to have some really sweet giveaways for all of our dinner party hosts. So stay tuned. We're so excited to celebrate with you.
So today we have a guest, Andrea Bemis. She is a cookbook author and recipe developer, like you've heard many times here on our show. But she's got a special little twist in that she runs a farm with her husband. So her husband, Taylor, is also on the line.
It was his first podcast ever, by the way.
The first time he's ever listened to one, or the first time he's ever been on one?
First time he's appeared on a podcast.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
So we have a husband and wife farmer. We have a cookbook author, a blogger, and they live outside of Portland, Oregon, living the dream on the farm. And Sonia digs into the dirty details.
Andrea and Taylor, welcome to the A Couple Cooks podcast.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you very much.
So, Andrea, I was watching the trailer to your cookbook, and you said something that interested me. You said, I never dreamed that my life would look like this. I never dreamed of being a farmer. So what did you dream of? Who were you before? And then how did you come to being a farmer?
I've worn many hats, but I went to beauty school to be an esthetician. So,
well, that's a little different.
It's a little different. Yeah. I was on the skincare path in early 2000, like 2004 and 5. And yeah, becoming a farmer was the furthest thing from what I envisioned my life becoming. But I met Taylor when I was 20, and he grew up on a farm, and that sort of sparked a little something early on, just what life could be like. But yeah, farming was not something that I ever dreamt I would become.
And Taylor, where did you grow up and what type of farm was it?
I grew up in Concord, Massachusetts, and my dad and his brother were running a basically 60-acre plus some leased land, but 60-acre version of what we're doing now.
Which is a vegetable farm.
Yeah, and they're a certified organic vegetable farm. They had 10 acres in fruit as well. 9 of that was apples. 1 was blueberries. But yeah, that was kind of what I grew up having access to and kind of being a part of to a small degree.
So let's hear the love story. How did you two meet?
We met working at a dude ranch in Montana. How many years ago was that?
14.
14 years ago. That's starting to make us sound old. But yeah, 14 years ago, we were working summer jobs at a ranch in Montana. And that's where it all began, I guess.
And you were still a beauty school student at this point?
No, I was about to head to the Aveda Institute in New York that fall.
And then you met this dashing farmer.
I did. And luckily he was finishing college on the East Coast, so we were able to take the bus to visit each other quite a bit while I was in New York and he was in Maine.
And Taylor, what did you go to school for?
I wound up studying psychology, which is not something that I've really put to use. But yeah, I was in college in Maine studying psychology, and at that time really was not interested in farming despite, doing it as a summer job and helping my dad out a good amount growing up. It was not something that I initially saw myself or us getting into at the time.
So what was it that changed that made this dream of a farm something that both of you were interested in?
I think I can speak for both of us. We bounced around quite a bit in our early 20s from different towns. And I slowly started to get into cooking and wanted to know a little bit more about where our food was coming from, and we were kind of living paycheck to paycheck for all of our youth, and which was great. We were pretty much living to have fun, But as we were getting older, it just started to feel like we both kind of wanted something a little more grounding and a little bit more meaningful. And I kind of remember I sort of brought it up to Taylor about the possibility of maybe wanting to move back to Massachusetts and learn the ropes farming wise. And I think you were pretty surprised that I had even been thinking about that, but.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, it was something that I had already been thinking about myself, but, you know, figured it would be, you know, not even worthwhile to bring up. So when, yeah, she, you know, said she was into it and brought it up herself, it was just kind of a green light. And within like a day or two, we called my dad and told him we were thinking about it, and pretty quickly made moves to head back to Massachusetts.
Wow, that's how you know when an idea is going to stick, is when two people come to it independently, right?
Totally. And it actually feels good to know that, yeah, I think both of us, it was a relief to be like, I didn't know that you were thinking about this. So yeah, it felt pretty good.
All right. And then take us from there to today. You're running this beautiful organic vegetable farm. How did you get there?
So yeah, we worked on Hutchins Farm. That's Taylor's family's farm, for three full seasons. And, the first couple months we were there, I know Taylor liked it quite a bit more than I did. I kind of had a rough go for the first couple months. But we, you know, we stuck it out, and eventually I really started to love the work. Taylor had a little more practice. But we loved farming. We loved being out on the East Coast, but it was a really big operation. Hutchins Farm was a big operation. There was a large crew, and we both started to kind of fantasize about having our own small scale operation, and to kind of create something of our own. We're both kind of entrepreneurs when it comes to kind of life. And I think that we liked the idea of creating something ourselves. And I grew up in Oregon. I'm not going to lie, I was a little homesick. And so the idea of farming out west, was something that was really intriguing. And so, yeah, we, after three seasons, packed up our bags and all of my kitchen gadgets and drove out to Oregon. And yeah, and here we are.
And how long have you been in Oregon?
This is our fifth season. Is that right, Ty?
Yes.
So yeah, our fifth farming season. So almost five years.
And you mentioned just kind of fantasizing about the West. When I was watching the video of your farm, it really looks like what you would picture. There's these beautiful mountains in the background and just lush, beautiful produce. It is just like a storybook.
I'm glad for it. It looks like that from the outside. But yeah, we're so lucky that we landed where we landed. It really is beautiful, and it's good to get reminded that we live in a really special place.
So at the same time that you have this farm going, you, Andrea, are also cooking a bunch, and somehow this turns into a food blog where you're taking photos of your food and creating these recipes for people. And I've told you this many times, but I have never, ever met a farmer. I've met a lot of farmers, and I've never met a farmer who knows one thing to do with the produce that they're selling. I would ask them at the farmer's market, okay, like, what should I do with this? And they're like, I'm not really sure. So I think it's just incredible that you've been able to not only create these recipes, but take these amazing photographs of them. Do you find that people are surprised when you say, oh yeah, I grew that, and then I took that photo of it?
I think people are surprised. My biggest mission for getting into cooking was, we started farming first, and then it was like, how are we going to get people to buy these vegetables? We're breaking our backs growing this food, but no one knows what to do with kohlrabi or fennel. I mean, there are people that know what to do, but we didn't know what to do with it. And so I started to play around in the kitchen, and I'd get really excited if, you know, a combination turned out. well. And so that's when I kind of started the blog. And now for us, part of our CSA program is we send out weekly recipes that go with the vegetables that will be in our CSA members' boxes that week. And it's proven to be really helpful and people are really thankful for it. So it's kind of that little fuel to keep producing recipes, because people are, I never thought people would actually cook my recipes, but it turns out they are, and they're having fun with the crazier vegetables that they receive that they wouldn't necessarily know what to do with.
And I know that being a farmer is one of the hardest, most intense jobs of anyone I know, some of my former friends. And then you're also doing these high quality recipes and photographs at the same time. Taylor, do you have any part in kind of the blog photography and recipe development side?
No,
I'm just stay away.
Yeah, I try to let that be her end of things. I might do some dishes here and there, or you know, hold a prop or something. But yeah, that's pretty much not my side of the operation.
Do you get to
here.
Be a hand model at all?
I'm sure that's come up. Everything comes up.
He does. He's a good spell checker.
Well, that's always a needed job.
Yes.
So you have this food blog, this very beautiful, well-curated food blog, and then all of a sudden you decide you want to write a book. How did that come about?
Well, that came about, I had never really, I dreamed of writing a book one day, but I more or less thought I would write more of like a farming kind of memoir. But I was contacted by a literary agent, and she was curious if I had ever thought about writing a cookbook. And we started to chat, and I had said if I were to do a cookbook, I really wanted to tell this farming story. And she was thrilled with that idea and thought that it would be, you know, make for a unique cookbook. And that, you know, the book, writing the proposal, I mean, you know, writing the proposal is so daunting. You know, from when I first started working on the proposal to when the book came out was probably maybe a 3-year process. But luckily we take winters off from the farm. So the book was worked on for, I guess, 3 winters. So I was able to do it, thank God. Otherwise, we would have to have hired employees for the farm if I was going to be working on it during the farm season. But yeah, got to work on it during the winter. And I actually had fun creating the recipes and watched a lot of YouTube videos on how to work my camera. but yeah, the photography has been the most stressful part. Creating recipes is not, but the photography part was... It's all new.
Well, it's an incredible book. It's gorgeous. And the storytelling in it woven through between the recipes is just really compelling. So congratulations.
Thank you.
So Alex and I, being a couple who works together, we love chatting with other couples who work together. And I'm wondering if the two of you, maybe each of you could answer the question of what would you say is your biggest takeaway for a successful husband and wife partnership?
I think it's good to, you know, there is some overlap, but generally we kind of, are pretty good about just like defining our own roles, and kind of each having our own chores, own tasks, just own, you know, our own directions, in terms of the farming side of stuff. And I don't know, it gives us a little bit of space, I think, and also a lot of appreciation for what the other brings to the table. And I don't know. Anything that you can do that just kind of allows you to, you know, to make it happen, I guess, is good. But that's sort of how we've done it.
Yeah, I think I can kind of second that. Just, you know, having a couple of separate chores or separate roles that each is not necessarily the expert on, but kind of manages, and then coming together to do the in-between stuff is makes it a little bit easier, and communicating quite a bit, obviously, you know, keeping each other in the loop, if things are going wrong or different things need to get done. But yeah, I think, you know, separate chores and then also just being really good at communicating and, you know, trying to have fun at the end of the day. You know, we cherish happy hour is like our, at the end of the day, just being able to, you know, close the gates at the farm and just crack open a beer and be like, all right, we're no more farming for the day is pretty important to call it quits.
Good boundaries.
Yeah.
They're key.
Yeah, totally. Boundaries are key. Because you could be working 24 hours a day and still never be done. So it's good to just call it. And we're all right at doing that.
I'm glad you mentioned having separate roles too. That's something that Alex and I also feel is a good key to success for us, especially in the kitchen. We both cook together. And so trying to nominate one person as the chef for that day, and then the other person is the sous chef, and they're kind of assisting the other person's vision, and then vice versa the next day. But it helps to kind of have specific roles that you're each bringing to the table so that you're not both trying to micromanage each other.
Exactly. That's good.
So I think it's easy to kind of look at your book and your website and the video of your farm and be like, oh, that's so perfect. It's such a fairy tale life. But I know that farming is just really, really hard work. And I know you mentioned that this season in particular has been a hard farming season. What does that look like?
Well, you know, one thing that I think people don't always know with, I mean, the stress level is, you know, that feeling that you just have in your chest that at any moment is just going to explode. I feel like we have that in our chest from March until about August, of just anything can go wrong or crop devastations can happen. And we run a CSA, so folks have already bought in for the season. And you feel like a failure if there's a crop devastation or, you know, there's irrigation issues or the tractor breaks down and, you know, there's always something that's going to happen. And we've been farming now for, I guess, almost 9 years total. And that doesn't go away. There's definitely, you know, there's definitely always going to be issues, but this year we got off to a pretty rocky start, with some major crop devastations. And we got through it and actually ended up having an all right season. Actually, it will end up being our best season to date, but it, you know, you feel like in the moment, if something goes wrong, that the whole season's shot. And it's easy to get sucked into that. So it's good to kind of take a step back and realize that your customers might not always realize that, oh, they were supposed to get broccoli in their box this week and there wasn't broccoli. There was, you know, I don't know, bok choy instead. But one of our CSA members made me feel good when I wrote them in the newsletter saying that they weren't going to be getting cabbage or broccoli or cauliflower in their boxes for the fall because we, you know, had a major devastation. And she was like, you guys notice what's missing. We don't. All we think about is all the awesome stuff that we get. And it was reassuring to, you know, we're so hard on ourselves, but it's nice to know that, you know, when people come to our farmers market booth, they're not looking to be like, wait, there's no fennel this week.
Taylor, how does growing up with a background in farming kind of help to weather those hard seasons?
You know, I guess maybe I at least had a little bit of a better idea of what we were getting into initially. You know, what I kind of miss about working, you know, on my family's farm is, well, I mean, really just any job where you're working for someone else is a lot of that, you know, pressure to succeed. at least in my experience, what didn't seem to fall on my shoulders as much. And I was just, you know, I was able to enjoy the work itself more. And now that it's, you know, financially, it's all on us. It's, you know, basically in terms of like the day-to-day sort of romantic vision you have of farming, that is completely gone. And it's just, it's full panic mode from the moment we wake up until the moment we go to sleep. And in the off season, you know, it's the part that I still really like about it and that makes it all worth it is that it really is so cool to see kind of your game plan for the season play out and, you know, the decisions you made on what crops to grow, the schedule behind it, how you amended the field, what, you know, every decision you make, just seeing how that works and how you're going to change it for next year. But yeah, in terms of the day-to-day stuff, at least for like that kind of 3-month heart of things where you're just like burning it at both ends, it's just full panic. No, like romantic, you know, farming thing.
Leave it to Taylor. Won't sugarcoat anything. That's
pretty, I guess not.
That's pretty accurate though.
From this season, what have you been proudest of on the farm?
I think a couple of things. We definitely nailed our winter squash harvest is going to be the best that we've had since we've been farming on our own. And we raised pigs this year for the first time, which was really enjoyable. I'm pretty proud that we were able to do that together. And
wow, that's a whole new skill set you're adding on.
Yeah. But, and then we have a nice healthy wait list for our CSA, which makes us feel pretty good that there's still demand for what we're doing and that people, you know, they want our veggies. So that makes us feel pretty darn good that there's still, despite days that we feel like we're failing, that there's still people that are supporting us and want to, yeah, be a part of the CSA or shop from us from the farmer's market. And that feels pretty good.
What do you feel like is one of the best ways to care for our earth and your food choices? Is it buying organic? Is it buying from small farmers? Are there things that our listeners could take away about buying responsibly?
Yeah, I think, you know, even over organic, you know, we grow organically, but I don't think that's should be the deal breaker. I think the most important thing for the planet is keeping it as local as possible. If you can do the majority of your grocery shopping from your local farmers and your local cheesemakers, and I know not everyone has access to that, but if you do kind of plan your groceries around what's at the farmer's market, I think that is pretty special, and I think that if everyone can kind of start to make an effort with that, I think that's where big change can happen.
So I'm wondering, you have this gorgeous book and beautiful produce. What do you guys eat on just a normal night on the farm during growing season? How do you make it happen in the kitchen?
it kind of changes every night, but generally there's, you know, something that Andrew's got to work on for either the website or I don't know, something, you know, she does a lot of recipes for other outlets as well. But so usually there's either something that's needs to get photographed or needs to kind of get tested that, you know, she can kind of, she'll dip out maybe a few minutes before I leave the field and start working on. And, you know, it's always something that's seasonal that's incorporating what we're growing. But I don't know, wildly different every night and tastes awesome and is probably something that I would not have made for myself if I was on my own. So I'm always happy and it always tastes great.
Thanks, babe. we're also big, like in the summer, anything on the grill. We grill, even, you know, I'll throw root veggies on the grill. We get good quality meat around here. So we'll throw, you know, a simple burger with like grilled, you know, turnips or something like that. I don't know. I think my favorite kitchen tool in the summer is our outdoor barbecue.
I agree, but I have never had grilled turnips. That sounds so interesting.
Sonia, you got to try the grilled turnips. They're pretty darn good. Yeah, slice them up, a little olive oil, sea salt, and then grill them until they're slightly charred. They're so good.
Wow. Do you use like a little grill pan for that to kind of keep them all from falling through the grates?
I throw them right on the grates.
Throw them right on.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Love that. I'm going to absolutely try that out.
Awesome.
All right. Well, in closing, I am going to ask you guys a question I like to ask our guests. If you had the opportunity to get a message across to a large group of people, what would your message be?
I mean, I guess just, you know, in terms of what we're doing and what seems important to us right now, both, I don't know, I guess obviously related to our business, but join a CSA. It just seems to, you know, be an important way to kind of accomplish a lot of things. You're supporting a local business, you're eating local seasonal produce. It's a chance. I guess I'm kind of assuming that everyone knows what a CSA is, but which probably isn't true. But you know, it forces you to eat vegetables that you might not necessarily buy. I don't know. It just seems to tackle a lot of the issues that I think, I don't know, are prevalent, at least in the world we're living in. And yeah, join a CSA if you can. Help out the farmer and help out you.
Totally. It's healthy for you, healthy for the planet, healthy for your community.
How about you, Andrea?
I think just keeping your money as local as possible is pretty darn huge. And it is a challenge. And I know that we're all so used to convenience, and it isn't always convenient to keep things super local. But I think that in the end, it's sort of the way that we need to shift our thinking. And I think that joining a CSA or making a pledge to shop the majority of your groceries from your farmer's market, and kind of, you know, making do with what's available and not taking it so seriously. I think that, you know, people sometimes come with a specific shopping list to the farmer's market. And if we don't have spinach, like, oh, but, you know, Swiss chard can work, but they want spinach. And I try not to get too, you know, people can buy whatever they want, so I don't say anything. But in my mind, it's, you know, try a different grain. So I think that, you know, working with what's available is important too.
That's a great point. And I think Alex and I have found that when you have parameters, it actually makes you even more creative to come up with something to do with the kohlrabi and the chard that you bought versus just having an open playing field where anything is possible.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for joining us today. As I mentioned, your book is incredible. Where can our listeners find you to follow along?
You can find me on, I'm on Instagram at Andrea Bemis, and my website is dishingupthedirt.com.
What about Taylor? Do you have an Instagram?
I still haven't figured out. I might have an old MySpace account, but I'm still in the dark ages
over there. Media thing. Okay.
But we have a farm website. The farm is called Tumbleweed Farm. So if you go to gotumbleweed.com, you can find out more about, you know, what we have available. If you're interested in CSA, you can fill out an interest form there. But yeah, Sonia, thank you for having us on.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. You heard us talk a lot about Andrea's book, Dishing Up the Dirt. She's actually offering to do a giveaway for our A Couple Cooks podcast listeners. So if you want to head over to acouplecookspodcast.com, you can click on the link to this episode and enter to win Dishing Up the Dirt, your very own copy.
And there'll be a little widget on that page where you can fill out your information, maybe leave a comment. And while you're on the show notes page, make sure to check out the links to Andrea's blog and to the Tumbleweed Farm, where you can find out more information about their CSA. And speaking of dishing up the dirt, we have a recipe to share from the cookbook today. So everybody here is a winner. It's a charred quiche with an almond crust. Tell me more.
Sure. So the recipe that we made from the book when we got it was a quiche. And one great thing about a quiche is that it's incredibly customizable. So you can literally have it for any meal, breakfast, brunch, lunch, dinner,
midnight snack,
everything. Midnight snack. All perfect. Right. you can serve it hot or cold or room temperature. So there's a whole lot of variation in what you can do with it. And then in the filling, you can also use really any vegetable that you'd like. So if you were serving it for dinner, I would say serve it alongside a green salad. If you're serving it for brunch, it could be part of a larger brunch spread.
And what's the difference between a quiche and a frittata again?
Well, a quiche has a crust. And usually it's a pastry crust, like a normal pie. But in this case, Andrea has created a gluten-free crust using almond flour. So this crust is actually one of the things I liked the best about the quiche. I mean, the filling was amazing too. But the crust was so, so good. It has some garlic in it and some fresh thyme and almond flour. And then actually a little bit of red pepper flakes and olive oil. So it's a really unique flavor. It's kind of crumbly and a really great improvement on the typical quiche.
Well, what I like about it is that it uses a quarter cup of a dry white wine, so you still have most of the bottle left over to share with your dinner guest while you enjoy the quiche.
Right, so maybe you might want to have it for dinner, I guess, unless you're day drinking. So.
Things just got ugly.
So another thing I wanted to mention, going back to the filling, you really can put anything in a quiche. And most of the time, it's good to saute the vegetables before you put them in. If they're a very thin vegetable, you could potentially get away with not sauteing them. But typically, you want to saute them down, maybe add a little bit of flavoring. In this case, we've sauteed some shallots and garlic and then added the greens and then they're cooked down. And I will note that Andrea's original recipe used mustard greens. I didn't have any on hand, so I decided to use chard. And you can replace any green for the greens. In this quiche, you can use spinach or kale or chard or even collards. Just saute them down until they're tender and throw them into the filling. And again, feel free to get creative with this. You could use all sorts of different vegetables, peppers, onions, mushrooms. You can add some crumbled sausage if you're looking for a meaty filling. There's all sorts of different things you can do. Actually, just this weekend, I had a quiche with some roasted potatoes in it and a few types of cheese. So the sky is the limit with quiche.
So that's the charred quiche with almond crust that you can find on acouplecooks.com. Just hit search in the top right corner, or you can find it in the show notes.
And as always, you can find lots more recipes over at acouplecooks.com. Also, feel free to follow us on Instagram. We're very active there, as well as on Instagram stories. And you can shoot us a direct message if you want to give us any feedback about our podcast or anything you see on our website.
And that's our show for today. I'm off to go recipe test to make sure I can put literally any vegetable into a quiche, because I like to back up all of Sonia's statements as truth here on the podcast.
I think it's true, really. I can't really think of any vegetable.
Kohlrabi.
I think that could work.
Potatoes.
Potatoes work.